Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpugam, and this evening we'll talk about term limits and democracy in Africa. And with us tonight is Clifford Mashiri. Clifford is a political analyst and a former Zimbabwean diplomat in Addis Ababa. He joins us by phone from London. Good afternoon, Mr. Mashiri.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon.
How are you today?
I'm all right. I hope you are enjoying it today in the United States.
Oh, we are. Thank you very much. We also have Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda. He joins us by phone from the capital, Kigali. Good afternoon, Christopher. Rather, good evening in East Africa.
Yes, good evening, Douglas Simpuga. Actually, the university now is called the University of Rwanda.
University of Rwanda. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Thanks for the correction, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Douglas. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And joining us from Durban in South Africa is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas.
Everything okay?
Everything is fine. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Once again, gentlemen, welcome to the show. As I said, our topic tonight is term limits and democracy in Africa. As most of our listeners may know, presidential term limits, most often two terms, are a common feature of democratic constitutions adopted in Africa in the 1990s. It was hoped then that the introduction of new constitutions, the two-term limit on power, would consign the big man syndrome of African politics to history. Now, today, 2015, almost 25 years down the road, it doesn't appear to be so. I mean, let me begin in Kigali there, because you are going through a process where you might have to do away with the term limits. It doesn't appear to be any more attractive.
Yeah, Douglas, at the moment, as things stand now, we are members of parliament are crisscrossing the country, discussing the idea of amending the constitution to remove or to increase term limits. And of course, as you know, there is also a concurrent process in the Supreme Court where one of the political parties here called the Green Party is challenging that process, is challenging that idea of changing the constitution. So these things are going on concurrently.
I see. Suleiman, if Rwanda pulls through with that amendment, they won't be the first, nor will they be unique, because since the 1980s, 18 African presidents have completed two terms in office. Eight presidents stood down without seeking a constitutional amendment to remain in office, while 10 attempted such an amendment, and the majority, 7, were successful. So this won't be a new thing on the continent.
It won't be a new one, certainly. For sure, what we can say with certainty is that, as you have said, Rwanda is not the first, and especially in East Africa. What is clear is that they are using the same template. For sure, once you are an incumbent, you have got all the machinery to do everything within your power to change the constitution. For certain, Rwanda, if Kagame is determined to remove the term limits, he's going to remove them. The process he's going through is almost the same process which other countries like Ghana have gone through. Uganda also did the same facade, whereby it pretended that the members of parliament are the ones who have the right to change the constitution, are going to discuss it, they are going to consult from the people. Then after consultation, they will come in and vote to see whether it is necessary or not. For the fact, for certainty, Rwanda, if they are determined to change the constitution, they are going to change the constitution, unless other forces come in, like in other countries.
I see. Let me go to London, to Clifford. As I introduced him, Mr. Mashiri is originally from Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe is one of the, I think, about 8 or so countries in Africa that does not contain a two-term provision in their constitutions. And you have been gifted with a leader, very visionary, who has been in power since 1980. How do you look at the whole this scenario?
This is a very disturbing scenario whereby the president of Zimbabwe, Mr. Mugabe, has changed the constitution several times, and the new one, which was adopted, in 2013, he has already started tampering with it, and he does not want to leave power. He has been in power for 35 years, and he looks like he is also going to run for elections in 2018. And by the time he leaves office, if he ever leaves, he will be 99 years old.
So, in other words, what are that? Doesn't that fit the description of life presidency?
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. This is exactly what President Obama was talking about at the African Union, where he was condemning this life president, saying nobody should be a life president. We want to believe he had in mind Mugabe.
Actually,
Douglas, let's put it this way.
Yes.
Apart from President Nzoma of Namibia, who asked for one term, and after that one term, he surrendered the chair, we have not seen any other person surrendering power. When you talk of the absence of term limit, the opposite is life presidency, without any doubt. So every country that has removed the term limit, it has gone for life presidents. Every country which has got no term limit, it means the president is there until death.
Christopher in Kigali, the people there, from the reports we get, millions of people are petitioned, including, and interestingly or uniquely in Rwanda, including opposition parties support the removal of this term limit provision.
You know, I think in Kigali it is a mixed bag. But let me first make 2 points before I answer your question. First, I think broadly, the way democracy has unfolded since the idea came into being from city-state mountain, democracy simply means people sitting and deciding who govern them on the basis of the ideas they believe in. It means that for power belongs to the people, and as long as they have the understanding and the right to give it and take it without any external or coercive element, then you have democracy. So this idea of term limits is not a constituent part of democracy. It was only introduced because of the nature of power in order to guard against imperial presidency, or what you are calling life presidency. But in itself, term limits is even a check on the idea that citizens decide. And of course, in Kigali, in Rwanda, it's different from the way the constitution was changed. For example, in Uganda, I had my friend, my colleague Sulaiman, talking about the way it was changed. In Uganda, it was parliament deciding to change. And if you read the newspapers correctly, some of the MPs were given 5 million Ugandans to participate in...
They were bribed. They were bribed, in short.
They were bribed. While in Kigali, as you say, over 3 million... over 3 million Rwandese petitions. But before that petitioning, there was also the idea starting from the elite.
Mm-hmm. Christopher, there are some commentators who have said bribery takes many forms, whereas in Uganda there was the clear bribery by giving people money. Yeah. There are that many people, those petitioners in Rwanda, according to some commentators, I'm not doing it willingly. What's your own assessment over there?
You know, I think it is extremely important to understand the context. The context here, unlike in Uganda, I would not say that there are individuals who have been bribed to participate in this process. because of the nature of the society here and because of the nature of governance here, most people are not into the business of bribing, either using money or jobs. I am not aware of who is involved in this process, who has been directly bribed. What I know is that those who support term limits, especially the elite, are either people who work with government or are in RPF, while those who have openly opposed are either in the Green Party that is seeking to have a say in government, maybe to gain power, and those who are the opposition that is outside the country. Therefore, that divide, the divide that those who are opposed are individuals who are not in government but are aspiring to be in government, and those who largely support it are either in government or associated with the RPF.
I see.
Then you can see that both sides are defending the side of the bread that is buttered.
Okay. Before I give chance to my the other panelists to respond, President Obama, as Clifford mentioned, was in Africa, addressed the AU, and addressed this particular issue. Let's see his take, then continue from there.
Yes,
but exactly. Under our Constitution, I cannot run again. I can't run again. I actually think I'm a pretty good president. I think if I ran, I could win. But I can't. So there's a lot that I'd like to do to keep America moving, but the law is the law. And no one person is above the law, not even the president. And I'll be honest with you, I'm looking forward to life after being president. I won't have such a big security detail all the time. It means I can go take a walk. I can spend time with my family. I can find other ways to serve. I can visit Africa more often. The point is, I don't understand why people want to stay so long. Especially when they've got a lot of money. When a leader tries to change the rules in the middle of the game just to stay in office, it risks instability and strife, as we've seen in Burundi. And this is often just a first step down a perilous path. And sometimes you'll hear a leader say, well, I'm the only person who can hold this nation together. If that's true, then that leader has failed to truly build their nation. You look at Nelson Mandela. Madiba, like George Washington, forged a lasting legacy, not only because of what they did in office, but because they were willing to leave office and transfer power peacefully. And just as the African Union has condemned coups and illegitimate transfers of power, the AU's authority and strong voice can also help the people of Africa ensure that their leaders abide by term limits and their constitutions. Nobody should be president for life. And your country's better off if you have new blood and new ideas.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama earlier this week addressing the AU in Addis Ababa. Let me go around the table now. Let me begin with Clifford in London. Your general take on his argument. He's not a member of our panel here, but he's very pertinent. What he's saying is pertinent to what we're discussing. Clifford, your take on that speech.
Oh, that speech was great. It was very inspiring. It was well received. We say so because of the applause, a lot of applause and standing ovations that he received from civil society and even some of the heads who were there. Who appreciated what he was talking about, and it was well received. in that respect. He was covering very vital, relevant, and pertinent contemporary issues of leaders who are not willing to leave power and who are changing constitutions or are in breach of the law.
I see. Suleiman, if you, as you said there, if you have, you can't finish everything you want to do. If you can't, if you argue that you have no somebody to succeed you, you have failed in your job. Do you share that?
100% Douglas actually answers my brother in Kigali. Everybody who has changed the constitution has come up with intellectual rhetoric, with intellectual interpretation of constitution and the conditions on the ground. Everybody has got his own sugar-coated reasons why he would like to change the constitution. First of all, the way we have to consider the way President Obama has put it 100% correctly, that for a leader to say that he's the only person who can put the country together, in Rwanda, 9 or 10 million people, only one person. In Uganda, you've got 35 million people, only one person for 30 years. Already he's a failure. Because there are so many reasons which they have given, which are opportunistic. People have begged me. In the recent election, he got 100% vote. The opposition is disunited, and there is nobody who can rule the country. Before he came to power, or if he dies tomorrow, you mean the country closes shop? Those are opportunistic. The fact of the matter is that the article of term limit is put there to restrict, to give the country the opportunity to change hands and to bring in new ideas. Secondly, whatever you say, my brother in Kigali, the spirit of the law remains that the people who put that article within the constitution wanted that after a certain period there should be change of hands. Even if the other interpretations allow it, even if the people want it, but at the time of the writing of the constitution, the spirit of the people, the spirit of the law is that people need a change. And that is naturally the way President Obama has put it.
Christopher, how are those words from President Obama received among those millions of people who are calling for removal of term limits?
I think that is, to me, that was one of his best statements on his visit to Africa generally, for three reasons. He's starting from a personal standpoint, a personal experience. He's saying, I think I have been a good president. I think there is a lot I can still do if I were in the office, but the law is the law, regardless of who you are, including the president. And embedded in that statement that the law is the law, he is trying to say that if you don't follow the law, if you don't follow the rules, then you are inviting violence, you are inviting conflict, as in Grund, as he said it. And I think that is important, because modern civilization, modern governance, peaceful transfer of power is based on the idea that you follow the law, what the law is. And I think that is number one. Number two, he's also saying that after the presidency, after my term in government, I will have a life to enjoy. I will not be having too many escorts. I will not be surrounded, so I will have freedom to move around, enjoy life. I will have to the freedom to enjoy in other capacities. So he's saying that he there is life after the presidency. And this is one of the problems that in many African countries we face, because presidents, African context, they don't think that there is a life after the presidency. Actually, what Obama is saying, that is a good thing, that it is good that if he's not surrounded by people who protect security services, that is a good thing, because he can walk around. Here in most of Africa, they think it is a good thing.
I see.
And if you look historically, you will find that some presidents who left office, when they left office, like for example Kenneth Kaunda, they were persecuted by people who took over, like President Chiluba persecuted Kabunda, saying that he's not even a citizen. So, you know, some of them even fear of what they have done when they are, while you're in the office. Many do not see a life after office. And finally, when he talks about the idea that changing, when you change the law, during the process of the political game, he is again talking about the idea that if you try to do that while you are trying to protect what you have, that is individualistic, but it will cause the country to collapse. And finally, to my friend Mugera, in my Ugandan friend, what I was talking about when I say that third term and Democrats are not part and parcel, I was trying to explain that democracy by itself does not include term limits. Term limits were imported to protect imperial presidencies or vice presidencies, but by itself, third term is not part of democracy. That is why you have countries where you don't have third term, you don't have term limits, like in UK, like in Singapore, like in Malaysia, but you have democracy. Why? Because there are traditions that allow that.
I see.
Because the people in those countries can decide without anybody deciding for them, because there is a certain level of education. These people are educated. There is a certain level of freedom. There is a certain citizens know what they want. Therefore, they cannot be manipulated.
Okay.
But by itself, third term is not part of democracy. It is only a check on abuse of power. It is only a check on life presidencies, but it is not part of democracy. Go and read all the definitions of democracy.
Okay.
There is nowhere you can say there is term limit.
Okay. Just hold on. Just I want to remind our listeners that this is Reponders Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is term limits and democracy in Africa, and our panelists are Clifford Mashiri, a political analyst and a former Zimbabwe diplomat in Addis Ababa, Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the University of Rwanda, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Almost winding up. Clifford, my brother there, Christopher, emphasizes that term limits actually has nothing to do with democracy. But the mere fact that the people, or the people in Africa, in several countries, felt that they had to put that check there, doesn't that make it a crucial part of the system, of the process?
Oh, yes, you are quite right. It makes it a part of the process. It is also accurate to say that term limits are not necessarily, you know, we could say hard and fast rules, because some leaders in Western countries have ruled for more than two terms, as we may know, even here in the United Kingdom, that has happened before. But the emphasis is it should be accepted as a convention. A convention is a practice that we take and use over and over when we accept it as part of our democracy.
I see. Suleiman, also the other point, I think, which the panel seems to agree on, is that is this African president, because they destroy all institutions and they commit some crimes along the process by overstaying in power, they fear to leave power because then they'll be harassed or arrested. So it's kind of an insurance policy to stay in power.
Yeah, that is why precisely among the architects of the term limits, that was one of the issues which they look at, that the more you stay in power, you tend to enter into a comfort zone and then start ignoring some basic important elements of leadership. That is why they had said there should be a term limit. But to go back on the issue of Obama's speech, I wanted to conclude it by saying that it is historical in the sense that I think it is putting a clause to the life presidency on the continent, It is the first time the African leaders have been told in no uncertain terms that the mentality, the 19th and the 20th century mentality of strong men, wise men, visionary men, invincible, impeccable, and infallible leaders, that one is now outdated. Obama has said the right for the people to determine their fate is a human right. People have to be given that dignity to determine who governs them without any coercion, the way my brother has said, without any coercion. Doesn't matter in what form they make it. But as far as this one is concerned, the life president, it is now outdated. The people of Africa have already expressed themselves in various countries, in their thousands. People in Nigeria voted 28 million. In Burkina Faso, thousands went on the street to show that they want democracy. In Egypt, in Tunisia, and other countries. For any leader now who thinks he is the most visionary, is the most invincible, it is a waste of time. Obama has said it is not a responsibility only of the people of that particular country, but it is a responsibility of the whole world to converge on these people who feel that they are life presidents. So from now onwards, it is going to be a crusade against them. They are wasting time. Time is over.
I see. We are running out of time. Christopher, 30 seconds on your general take. Should Africa actually insist on time limits or not?
No, I think the biggest problem is two. First of all, term limits were imported, like even this constitution. They were imported, and then we try to cut and paste, but they are not originally in our way of thinking and in our belief. And finally, even the idea you are talking about, the people have decided they have put this constitution. I think that is most constitutions in Africa, and they are put in place by elites. They are the ones who even change it. The idea that the peasant, that the ordinary citizens are deciding, I think it is a fallacy. We only go cut and paste and start complaining, but I don't think we are a rule-based society. We are still thinking in terms of kingdoms, because the kings never retire.
I see.
Because we are ushered into modernity by these constitutions, we cut and paste. But when we realize that it is not in our veins, it's not in our culture, we change them.
I see.
So, even term limits were important.
Okay,
and even the idea to think that citizens are the ones who are deciding the
constitution.
Gentlemen, we're running out of time. But Clifford, would Zimbabwe have had a better trajectory had there been term limits in about 10 seconds?
Yes, sure. Zimbabwe would have benefited a lot if they stuck to term limits. They are very important. Constitutions were imported. They were also cut and paste all over the world. So there is no way of saying only term limits are the cut and paste. Everything was imported and amended.
Suleimani, even the idea of democracy is an imported phenomenon on the continent.
Concept.
The way Obama said, we have got some universal principles or some universal values which are common to everybody. The idea of allowing people to change is a universal idea and a universal principle which should be emulated by anybody. It has worked for the Americans. Why should it not work for Ugandans? It has worked for the Germans. Why is it not working for Rwandans? It has worked for the French.
Okay.
Why is it not working for the Congolese?
Gentlemen,
it is opportunistic to say, these are imported or these want it this way.
Gentlemen,
we should have it because it has worked elsewhere.
Gentlemen, we could go on for another until cows come home, but we'll revisit this topic again some other time. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the University of Rwanda, Clifford Mashiri, a political analyst and a former Zimbabwe diplomat in Addis Ababa, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much,
Douglas.
You're welcome, gentlemen. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer was Sidrak Franklin. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. So until then, I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.